Known as Samit and Kushan.
Dadarsha,
Yeah. Krishna. So, Sukadeva Goswami continues to narrate the pastime of Ajami to Maharaj Parikshit. And this verse brings us to that event, that scene that Ajami sees and which acts as a turning point in his life. You know? So, a moment's association of what we see or we do is described here, how it may impact our consciousness. So, you see, because Parikshit Maharaj was curious and he was actually very disturbed when he heard the narration of the hellish planets in the previous canto, the last few chapters narrate the hellish planets. So he wanted to ask Maharaj Parikshit, how can we save the people of the world, the masses in general, from falling into these hellish planets, because this is too much suffering. Then Sukadeva Goswami starts to narrate this pastime of Ajami. But before he gets here, he actually tests Maharaj Parikshit. As you heard in the previous verses, how he actually first says, yes, you just do atonement. You commit a sin, you just atone it, right? How do you atone it? You perform the activities mentioned in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, the sacrifices, the charities, the austerities, and you have nullified the reactions of all the past sins that you performed, right? But Maharaj Parikshit was more intelligent than that. He said, this is like Punjari Kotwa, this is like bathing of an elephant. So how does an elephant bathe? An elephant goes to a water body or a lake or a river, and he splashes a lot of water on himself. You know, using his trunk, he splashes all the water on himself and becomes thoroughly clean. But then he comes back to the ground, he comes out of the water, and then again he picks up, what does he pick up now? He picks up sand. And then he showers all the sand on himself, right? And then he again gets dirty. So next time he goes back into the water, he'll again pick up the water and he'll shower it on himself. So that's why Maharaj Parikshit, why does he use this example? Why does he say it's like bathing of an elephant? He says, because a simple person may realize he's now committed a lot of sins and now he's afraid of getting the reactions, what will he do? He will go to the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, perform the sacrifices meant written there, and then he get rid of the sins that he has performed. But how will he get rid of the tendency to sin again? Right? Just as the elephant can't stop coming back and showering sand on himself, a sinful person cannot stop from committing sins. So he will continue to commit sins and continue to atone. So sinful tendencies and then sinful activities and then atonement. So this goes on. That's why Maharaj Parikshit, he says this is not enough, this is not good enough. There must be something else. So then, Parikshit Maharaj mentions to him about Jnana Marga, how knowledge can help us overcome, how austerities, right? How we know how Jnana is there, advanced in knowledge, we perform austerities, severe austerities. And they refrain from any sinful actions completely. But they also fall down, right? They also, we know sages, even sages, great sages who were great Jnanis, they fell down from their position because they couldn't control their mind and senses, right? So then, then in text 15 of this chapter, Maharaj Parikshit finally gives this point, Kinchit Kevalya Bhakta, he says, yes, only a devotee is able to overcome these proclivities. He is not only able to overcome or able to nullify his past reactions, but he also will not do any sinful activity in the future. Now, how is that ensured? Because the heart becomes cleansed by doing bhakti, right? And here, as we see, you just mentioned how Ajami actually, when he was at the scene, he's actually just such a pious Brahmin, he's a wonderful Brahmin. So, on the instructions of his father, he goes to the forest to collect some flowers and fruits. So, while he's picking that, he watches the scene and what is mentioned as he sees it, right? If he wanted, he could have closed his eyes. If he wanted, he could have looked away, right? Because he knew this was not right. He was well versed in the scriptures. scriptures and he knew this was not right, so he could have looked away, but he didn't, right? So what does that indicate? That all his piety wasn't good enough to save him from this tricky situation, right? And as is mentioned in the verses, in 56-57, what do they say? In the beginning, this Brahmana named Ajamila studied all the Vedic literature. So he was well versed with what is to be done and what is not to be done, what is appropriate behavior and what is not appropriate behavior. He was a reservoir of good character. You see how Sukadev Goswami is glorifying what he actually is. Good conduct and good qualities. He was a reservoir of good character, good conduct and good qualities. Firmly established in executing all the Vedic injunctions. So it was not that he was learning, right, and then he fell. But he was firmly established in following the Vedic scriptures and doing all the following injunctions. And then his behavior is mentioned. He was mild and gentle. And he kept his mind and senses under control. But what happens in the next few verses, today's verse, what is it mentioned? He could not keep his mind and senses in control. Right? He falls prey to the situation. Furthermore, he was always truthful. He knew how to chant the Vedic mantras. And he was also very pure. So you see, after a while, all this explanation is given because Sukadeva Goswami wanted Maharaj Pariksit to understand how exalted the position was of Ajamila. He wasn't just an ordinary person. He was a Brahmana, that was a perfect Brahmana. Right? Spotless character. And then what is described in these verses, today's verses, to actually indicate how he, all his piety, in spite of the fact of his exalted position as a Brahmana, all his piety couldn't save him, right? So, there is a similar pastime. So, you know that Srila Vyasadeva, he is the son of Parashukuni Sankadani. And Vyasadeva, we know he is a literary incarnation of Lord Krishna himself. And Vyasadeva had many disciples. He was the most senior of his time. So, all these other sages used to take initiation from him. So, Jaimini Rishi is one of the sages who was his disciple. And Jaimini Rishi was also entrusted with the task of dividing the Vedas. Initially, there was just one Veda. But when we know at the onset of Kali, as is mentioned in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Mandu Sumandu Matya, Mandu Bhagavatam Vipadrita, in this age of Kali, people are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, right? They are mandu, they are not intelligent, right? And above all, always disturbed. So, to cater to the needs of such people, then Vyasadeva asked some of his disciples to take this one Veda and segregate into different parts to meet the needs of different consciousness of people. So, Jaimini Rishi was so such a good disciple because he was chosen as one of those who would segregate the one Veda into different Vedas. Now, one time when Srila Vyasadeva was giving instructions to his disciples, he was talking on the topic of mind control and senses. And he actually mentions to all his disciples that we should all be very careful of Maya, that Maya can influence us anytime, and the mind and senses can go out of control. So we should all control our mind and senses. We should all be vigilant. Now, on hearing this, generally, Rishi said, we are sages. We have already controlled our mind and senses. And we are strong. We are strong in our conviction. So we will not fall. But even then, Vyasadeva instructed him. He said, no, you should still be careful. You should still be vigilant and follow the rules. Right? So then what happens is, then after some time, Srila Vyasadeva has to go to Varanasi. So he tells Jaimini Rishi that I have to go for some time. And Jaimini Rishi looks after the ashram, the hut in which he was living. So he's by himself now. But he does all his daily duties, he follows the scriptural injunctions, he does all the yajnic sacrifices. So one day he sees something very unusual. So Jaimini Rishi sees that the weather is quite strong. It's this thunder and rain, heavy rain, pouring rain. And there is a beautiful young lady who's standing under a tree. And he realizes how she's actually, she's already wet, it's cold, she's taken shelter under the tree, but even then, she's already too wet. The tree couldn't give her shelter because the rains are very heavy. So she's shivering. So then he feels compassion for her, and he approaches her and he says, "Why don't you take shelter in my hut?" Right? So she actually reminds him that you are a renunciate, you are a sage, I cannot be together with you in the hut. So he says, "Don't worry, I will not be inside the hut, I will wait outside. I will be outside till the rain stops." So the lady agrees because she's already feeling miserable with the cold weather. So she goes inside the hut and she is sitting there. And then, but when Jaini Rishi is now outside, he has already seen this beautiful woman and he has given her shelter. But the thought comes to his mind that I want to be with her. There is no harm in talking to her. Let me talk to her. Right? So he knocks at the door and he says, "Look, I am also cold outside. It's wet and cold, so can I also please come inside?" And she says, "Yes, dear sage, it's your hut. Please come in." So when he comes in, he sits in one corner, and then the mind, how it plays on you, right? How it goes out of control. So then he develops the desire to go near her and to embrace her. So while she's sitting with her back towards him, he goes and embraces her. But he finds it a bit strange. He says, "Why is she feeling so muscular?" And then suddenly it also feels that she has a beard. And then when he goes in the front, who is he? Srila Vyasadeva sitting there. And then he becomes completely shocked and he realizes, realizes the instruction his Guru Maharaj had given him. And then he's very repentant. He falls at his feet. So you see, this is the situation when the bhakti isn't there, right? So Srila Prabhupada, he mentions here also in this workbook that as long as you are following the six regulatory principles and you are chanting 16 rounds, you are saved. But the minute these two are the basic, right? It is meant that even this is what, at least it ensures the basic human form of life. If you call yourself a human, you should be doing this. And he says that if you don't do it, then you risk taking another birth. Then you can't get out of the cycle of birth and death. So in this way, the mind and senses can drive us into situations, they can completely change our lives. As we see here that Ajamil completely changed after he saw this lady with this Shudra man. So, and in the following verses we'll see how in the previous verses we've seen how he actually kicks out his pious chaste wife and he moves in with this prostitute and he's living with her for many, many years. And he uses up all the inheritance that he got from his father and then he starts plundering other people, he starts stabbing them to get money. So he engages in all sorts of abominable activities to please her, right? So that's why Srila Prabhupada is actually very, he makes it a point. So even in the example of Jaini Rishi, what is the mistake he made? He knows that as a renunciate, as a sadhu, he is not supposed to associate with a woman. He out of compassion, initially what he had was genuine compassion. It was not that initially he had anything for her. He knew he had to be a renunciate and he knew the rules. But out of compassion, he asked to help her. But how that compassion changed into a desire which was not meant for a sadhu, it just takes a few moments, right? So what did he do? He did not follow the rules of his ashram and he fell down. So here, what we talk, that Ajamil saw this and this scene that he saw, it played and played and played on his mind so much that he became possessed by the attraction of this lady and then he fell down. Just like here, Srila Prabhupada mentioned in this purport that these kind of scenes are very common these days. And if you see, a lot of you probably go for Harinam on Friday nights. What do you see? What happens on Friday nights? Inappropriately dressed women, drunk women with drunk men, they're roaming around and they think this is okay, they think this is normal. Right? It's not that they're not even embarrassed or ashamed. They think it's normal. when Srila Prabhupada says here, it's something that they're doing in public without caring of what the implications will be of this on children, on elderly people, on others. They don't want to see the impact of it on others, like Prabhupada says, if brahmacharis should stay away from these kind of scenes or these kind of, but how to stay away when others don't care, right? So there is no sense of responsibility. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada was once reading a magazine, you know that he travels a lot. So while in a plane, he just picked up a magazine, he flipped through a few pages, and then he actually just threw it away. He said, no, just don't even look at these things, right? See, this is how, what is he trying to show us here? That the visual impact of what we see is can be so great that it can just play on your mind. It can pollute your consciousness. So even to look at a magazine, it was a political magazine, something on the daily news and photos of what was happening. But even that, he said, this is not needed. It's not desirable. So threw that magazine away. Right? So the underlying string here, the underlying point here is that only devotion to Krishna can save us. Right? So because we can elevate ourselves to pious piety, we can follow the kind of manifestation of the Vedas, follow those activities that tell us the do's and don'ts, okay? Don't do this, don't do this, otherwise you will get sinful reaction. So we only do these things that won't give us sinful reaction, right? But then piety in itself cannot ensure that we remain pious all our lives, can it? Ajamila was pious, but then piety didn't protect him from falling down. Piety didn't keep him pious. So then, piety isn't enough. And then also, even if you are pious, if you think, okay, you have attained pious, what next? What is there then? What should you do? So, you know, in this way we know that even though Ajamila was a perfect Brahmana, he was overcome by lust. He fell prey. You know, like as you saw in the previous verses, it is mentioned. So that's how it's, you know, a person in mode of goodness, they like to live without hurting others. They're loving, they're forgiving, right? They help the poor and the needy. They make a lot of donations and charities. And it's actually, and they create a lot of peaceful environment around them because they're always giving and loving. So people actually like that. They're very attractive people, you know, to the rest of the society. But remember that they're also getting sense gratification. They may not be getting sense gratification in a bad way, right? By offending others, by competing with others, by hurting others. But they're doing it in a good way, but they're still doing it. So, what are the mind and senses doing? They are still not engaged in the service of the Lord. They are still engaged in sense gratification only, but in a pious way, right? Whereas we see those who are in mode of passion, they compete a lot. Unlimited desires in the heart, and irrespective of whether others are becoming offended or whether it is about the impact their desires or their actions have on others, they will do that. Right? So they pursue unlimited desires. Whereas those who are in mode of ignorance, when they pursue their desires, they can even harm their own self. Right? They can even harm themselves because they don't even know right from wrong. So in this way, if you see all these three kinds of people, those who are even in mode of goodness, like Sambha, like Brahmanas, they also engage in sense gratification. But you see, having said that, we cannot say that there is anything wrong with piety. Piety itself, it's good to have. It sets up a good ambience around. But then it can't get you out of this material world. It still keeps you in this material world, right? Just as we say, gold chains, silver chains, and iron chains. When you are in mode of goodness, you are in gold chains because you're still here. No, it's just like saying you're in a prison, and in that prison, nobody is bullying you, right? Nobody is causing any discomfort to you, and you feel, oh wow, this is a nice prison, but it still is a prison, right? So in this way, in this world, so and about making rules, how can you make rules? We see people make rules, like for example, people think dressing inappropriately or not properly and drinking and smoking, this is okay, but how do they know this is okay? To be able to make rules, first you should know the law. What are the laws of God? Right? If you don't know the laws of the God, you'll make your own rules. Right? So a lot of these people who actually have a lot of power and position are the ones who actually say, oh, sinners must be prosecuted. You know, the action must be taken against them. Why? because they have power and position, they are afraid of losing it. Somebody else might take them, right? And they can't enjoy their power and position comfortably, because those who are sinful, they might come and plunder them, they might come and disturb their sense gratification, right? So, in this, so the Karmakanda section of the Vedas can only take us to this level of, okay, of piety, where you want to live in a way where nobody disturbs your sense gratification. But it is still sense gratification. You're still in a prison. You're still in a prison where others don't disturb you and you want to live that kind of a life. Right? But it cannot happen in this material world. That's why to be able to control your mind and senses, what do you do? We engage them in service to Krishna. As long as we think we are in control, we are able to control our mind and senses, then we are still in a very precarious situation. But when we surrender to the Lord, then the Lord guarantees, like Srila Prabhupada mentions here, Kaunteya Pratijani Ki Nami Bhakti Aparashti, that the Lord guarantees that I will look after you. If you have surrendered unto me, if you are engaging your mind and senses in my service, then I will protect you. Right? So this is a great assurance that Lord Krishna gives us in Bhagavad Gita when he says this. Now if you see this, in contrast to devotees, right? Now we know Haridas Thakur, Haridas Thakur. A prostitute came to her, to him, with the intention to manipulate him, right? Here, this, you know, Ramana, when Ajahn saw this situation, it was not that it was intention of the prostitute to manipulate, right? It was, he just saw something and he became distracted. Whereas in case of Srila Haridas Thakur, this prostitute actually came with the intention to manipulate him, to corrupt him. But, and she did, and it wasn't just for one moment or for 1 hour, three nights she was there. And Haridas Thakur would always tell her, the first time she came, he said, I need to finish my fixed number of rounds, you please wait, and then I'll fulfill your desire. So she waited all night and she heard him chant. And then the second time when she again came, she again heard him chant. And he saw how nicely he was chanting. And the third night when she came, she again heard him chant. And then she was completely transformed to see how dedicated he was. Right? And then you know how she from being a prostitute, she became a disciple of Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur instructed her, you give away all your possessions and you come and live here and you chant the holy names. And then Srila Haridas Thakur leaves that place and entrusts that place to her, and she lives there, she gives away all her possessions. She was a very wealthy person. She gives away all her possessions to Brahmanas, to Vaishnavas, and she comes and lives there and she worships Tulsi Maharani very nicely, and then she chants the holy names of the Lord. You see? So this is the difference between when a devotee comes across a tricky situation, a distracting situation, and when someone who's just pious comes into a contact with such a tricky situation. Yes. And not this, if we, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's mentioned about Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy was a very opulent person. He was a governor of Madras. You see, like he had all these stately duties to do. He was a governor. But deep inside, he had another side to him. So, right? He had a secret life. He was so exalted that Mahaprabhu would discuss the most intimate pastimes and the most intimate leelas of Radha and Krishna just with him. And Sarvama Bhattacharya actually made this comment that Mahaprabhu, he is actually the only one who is eligible to talk about these pastimes to you. He is the only one with whom you can actually enjoy these rasas, because he's the only one so exalted and so pure. And then, so one time, Mahaprabhu sends Pradyumna Mishra to discuss some pastimes of the Lord. Because Pradyumna Mishra comes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to discuss some pastimes. He wanted to have some Krishna Katha. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sends him to Ramananda Roy. And so he's a governor, so he's very busy and he has many activities to perform. So he goes to the place and his servant, Ramananda Roy's servant, takes him inside, gives him a respectable position to sit, and so then he requests that you wait, please wait. Ramananda Roy is right now busy, and he asks, what is he busy? He says, so he's getting the girls ready for a drama to be performed in front of Lord Jagannath. So then he waits for a long time there. But when he waits there, he actually finds out that Ramana the Rayat is not only teaching them how to dance, he's not only teaching them the facial expressions, but he's already bathing these girls, he's dressing these girls, he's putting makeup on these girls. And Jagannath shows a bit, he had his doubts, and he, that day when, but he still waits till Ramana the Rayat comes, but he says, yes, our delay is late, thank you very much, and then leaves. And then he goes straight back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says, Mahaprabhu, you want me to talk to him and this is what he was doing. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that Ramana the Rayat is the mood of a Manjari. Manjaris are even younger, even younger to gopis. He has the mood of a maid servant who actually look after the gopis, take care of the gopis and get them ready for the Leela with the Lord. So because he has this mood, and you see, even though he had this material body, it did not impact him one bit when he was in such close contact with those young girls. So that's why Ramananda Rai was, that is why Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya mentioned that he is the only one, Mahaprabhu, with whom you can have these conversations, you know, these, and discuss these most intimate leelas of the Lord. Because he was constantly, always in the mood of a Manjari, who was going to serve the gopis. So when he was dressing these girls, it was the mood of a Manjari, like a little servant who's assisting the gopis of the Lord, you know, the sakis of the Lord. So this is how someone who's still in his material body, but in such an exalted position that these kind of exposures to these kind of situations will not even touch them. So in this way, Maharaj Parikshit, when he has questioned that the pastime of Ajamila is actually just pressing upon this one point, that only the devotees of the Lord can sustain, they can only overcome these kind of situations. They're the only ones who can control their mind and senses. Why? Because they have engaged their mind and senses in the service of the Lord. Right? As long as you engage your mind and senses in the service of the Lord, then the Lord takes your responsibility. He gives you the guarantee that he says, you know, he says, my devotee never perishes. He says, my dear Arjuna, you declare boldly that my devotee never perishes. So he is the one who protects us. Right? So as long as we surrender to the Lord, then he will protect us. And that is the point. So bhakti is the only process which can shake or darpana margin. Neither the karmakanda, the atonement, nor the jnanakanda can cleanse the desires in the heart. The dirty desires in the heart. Only devotion service to the Lord, as Mahaprabhu has himself said, Cheto Dharpana Marjanam Bhava Mahatava Hiranakam. It has the potency to take us to transcendence. After this, Bhava Mahatavagi. It's a forest fire, it's not a small forest fire, it's a Mahatavagi, it's a great forest fire. On our own strength and ability, it is impossible to get out of here. But when we take shelter of the Lord, then He takes responsibility to take us out of here. So, and see, this is another thing that Prabhupada mentions. Therefore, all these disciples practicing Krishna consciousness, it's like he's talking to all of us. Therefore, all the disciples practicing Krishna consciousness should obediently follow the regulative principles. How should we follow? Obediently follow the regulative principles. And remain fixed in chanting the holy names of the Lord. So, never ever should we miss our 16 rounds. And that's at least 16 rounds. That is not the end, that is the beginning stage, right? And then he says, then there need be no fear, right? So Srila Prabhupada is assuring us, then you are safe, you know? Otherwise, one's position is very dangerous, especially in this Kali Yuga. Because of this Kali Yuga, you see that even in this Kali Yuga, because of the influence of the Kali Yuga, even the most advanced in knowledge, if you're able to advance in knowledge, can commit offenses, serious offenses. Right? So, in the pastime of Yayati, I think Yayati, King Yayati mentions to his wife that a man should not sit on the same seat with his own mother, sister, or daughter, even. because the mind and senses are so strong that a person who is advanced in knowledge, even he can fall down and become attracted to sex. Right? So even to with their own mother, one would think, you know, how is this possible? But yes, even with their own mother, daughter or sister, you should not. Right? And there's another verse that actually says that women are like fire and men are like butter. Right? So these verses are there for a reason. And you know, because even in the scriptures we see how Sabari Muni fell down. And he didn't see even human beings, he saw two fish populate. Just imagine how strong it is, the desire is. Right? Even when you see a fish, it came to your mind, right? That's how. And then Vishwamitra Muni. Such an advanced person, like not this wasn't a devotee, but he was a great sage. And yet when Menaka was sent by Indra, he just completely became distracted and he lost all his punya and lost all his sages because he started living with her as a grihastha. Then he had to start again. Right? Because he wanted to be a Brahma Rishi, he had to start again. So that's why it is mentioned that women are like fire and men are like butter. So a reasonable distance has to be maintained. Rules and regulations have to be followed. Right? And that's why Srila Prabhupada says grihastha ashram gives you that responsible license where you act responsibility, you fulfill your desires in a way that is mentioned in the scriptures. And if you do that, then we can protect yourself, you can be safe. So in saying that, I'll end here. And if anybody has any comments, questions or corrections?
Hare Krishna, Madhuri.
Thank you.
Very brilliant lecture. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll tell you an incident myself. I was a new pastor about 25 years back. And I don't know why I was near the beach. Mm-hmm. Newcastle Beach is very nice, industrial. Very beautiful, really exciting. So I was just passing by and one young lady just stopped me. So I didn't know. I didn't remember. But she was so attractive also. So I thought she might want to go. That the India people want to go. So I didn't mind. As soon as she said to me, Nipah, she said, you can come with me and I'll give you a nice bath and take you around and say, my God! Very stupid. So I follow my Guru Maharaj, Devadasami, he said. So I didn't talk to her at all. I said, where do I drop you? That was the only question I had in my mind. So she told me, where do you drop me? So this is what holy name is definitely saving us from all the nonsense. I'm not saying that I am good, but what I'm saying is the things are so tempting, they can tempt anybody and any situation. So what Bhagavatam is saying is absolutely 100% correct. And only devotional service and chanting of the holy name. So that was my comment. I have a question. These two grasses, Samit and Kusha, can you tell us a little bit more about those grasses, how they are so species? Because if his father asked him to bring those things from forest, there must be some reason. Thank you very much. Thank you for a beautiful place. Thank you.
So, Prabhupada doesn't mention anything about these grasses here. But I think we always hear Kusha grass is something that's always used to sit on when you perform sacrifices.
Yeah.
Something I'm coming across this for the first time. But yes, it's not mentioned in the book, but Prabhupada doesn't describe much on this.
I don't know myself. I'm testing. I don't know myself.
Hey, you're testing. Sorry. This is the knowledge I have. This Kusha grass is always here.
Yeah.
In music and some sacrifices that perform these Kusha grass. Yes, it's considered sacred, it's considered sacred, but why it's considered sacred, that I'm not aware of. These specific kind of grasses, they have something, that's why I considered sacred.
I thought you were the self, so you mentioned.
Not on the glasses.
Thank you.
Any other question?
Material. You listen so much, so many lectures.
Thank you. Granthashri Bhagavatam Ki.